Welcome to the last episode of Season 1 of the Blue Radio Podcast. In this episode, we will be hearing Part 3 of Kimberly's story. Up to now, in Part 1 and Part 2, we have heard of Kimberly's story up to the age of 10, up to the time that she was sexually abused and attempted suicide. Then she was sent to Children's Psychiatric Hospital. That we will hear about her experiences in this episode. Lastly, I would like to, before diving into Kimberly's story, dedicate this episode to anyone who could not speak up about their abuse. If you're out there listening, I want you to know that whether you were afraid of your abusers or afraid of the label that society gives you, I stand with you. I won't judge you. I know that it wasn't your fault. I hope one day you can talk about it. More importantly, I hope one day you will find the right person and right platform to talk about it, that it actually will be healing for you. I hope one day it won't be a burden for you anymore.
Well, she smelt the melting material, and the next day I was in a psychiatric hospital for children. And I was there for a long time, and they did a lot of tests on me, and my mother started telling them about all of these things that I was doing that I really wasn't doing at home, like I was having violent outbursts, and I was doing bad, horrible things, and I was hurting her on purpose, and I was violent towards people and probably animals, and, you know, just all these things. She was just saying all this stuff about me because she was on this new kick all of a sudden to get diagnoses for me, because I guess shortly before shortly after I was labeled, with the learning disabilities and the hyperactivity, she filed with disability and started getting money, disability money for me, because of my learning disabilities and whatnot. So when I was in the psychiatric hospital, she got this bright idea that she was going to tell these people these horror stories of all of this stuff that her psychotic daughter was doing, and all the things, just horrible things that were all made up. And so I was being tested for a gamut of psychological issues, and I was given so many diagnoses for so many different things, and I was put on so many different medications, and all of it, honest to God, all of it was trauma. It was all trauma. But they weren't being told that I was being abused at home, and I wasn't telling them I was being abused at home, because my mother had them believing so wholeheartedly that everything I said was a lie. Everything. Nothing truthful came out of my mouth. So anything that I told them would be a lie, would be a story, would be a way for attention. So I knew that telling them the truth, they wouldn't hear it anyway. So I didn't tell them that I was being abused, and I just let whatever they said happen, because there was no point in arguing, because the psychiatrist I had, I started seeing a psychiatrist shortly before I was 10, because of, honestly, I don't remember. The school wanted me to see a psychiatrist because they wanted to rule out something as to why my schoolwork suffered and why I was such a bad student, and I wouldn't sit in my seat, and I wouldn't do my work, and I wouldn't focus on the teacher, and I was too busy showing my underpants to the boys and doing all these weird things. And so they wanted to rule some things out, and that was when she told my first psychologist or psychiatrist, whatever he was, that anything that I would have to say would be a lie. So when I was telling him everything that had actually happened to me and why I was acting out and why I was doing what I was doing, he told me that I needed to stop lying to him and tell him the truth. And I was so confused because I was telling him the truth and I wasn't lying to him, but he was convinced that I was because of what she had told him. And so by the time I went to my next psychiatrist after I was released from the psychiatric hospital and my mom had told him everything that she had told all the others, that I like to tell stories and that my story of this horrific abuse that I like to tell people was all lies and completely made up, and it was all done just to hurt her and, make her look bad. So he would go back and he would tell her everything that I said, and my stepfather. He would tell them both everything that I had said, everything about what they had done to me, because I figured, well, I wasn't gonna get believed anyway, so I might as well just talk about it, because I needed to talk about it, because, you know, this stuff was happening to me and I didn't know what to do about it. And so as I'm telling him the truth, he thinks I'm telling him lies. So he goes back and he tells my mom and stepfather, you know, this stuff, all the lies that I'm saying. And then I get home and I get beaten because I'm telling the truth and they know I'm telling the truth. And so I get beaten because I'm telling the truth and they don't want to get caught. And they're telling me to keep my mouth shut and don't say things about what's going on at home. And then the next time I go to therapy with them, I don't say anything at all. And for several sessions, I say nothing. I just sit there and stare. And then he tells them that I'm not saying anything. I'm not talking about a damn thing. Not a thing. Then I get home and I get beaten because I'm wasting time and money not saying anything. And so, like, what am I supposed to do? I can't talk about the truth. Why do I want to lie? I mean, there's nothing to lie about. What am I going to say? My life is great. It's full of happiness and sunshine and unicorn farts shooting rainbows. I mean, what am I supposed to do?
This experience led Kimberly to start a self-harming habit that continued well into her adulthood.
Anyway, all of this developed my self-harming journey. There we go. I started cutting myself, and still to this day, when I get overwhelmed, when life gets too much, when I feel too many emotions, when whatever, I still, to this day, at 43 years old, cut myself, burn myself, not like burn myself, but, you know, like you take a dull item and you know, you give yourself like a friction burn kind of thing. I shouldn't say burn myself, but yeah, so, you know, I haven't outgrown that, and I don't think I will outgrow that, because that is a self-help thing that I've I developed as a young child, and for some reason it helps me in the moment. I don't like doing it. I don't like the scars that I have left behind, and I don't like that it hurts my husband, and I don't like, you know, how I feel afterwards. But given the moment and the emotions and the release, everything else, I can't think about all that stuff. And I need that release. And then after I have that release and then reality comes back, then I feel like crap. And sometimes it makes me want to do it again.
At the age of 12, Kimberly had the opportunity to stand before a judge in order to leave her mother and go live with her father. Even though Kimberly's mother was abusive and there was enough evidence and testimonies that she had been abusive towards her children, the law at that time was not on Kimberly's side. So, she had to work hard to convince the judge for her to be able to leave her mother and go live with her father. She was successful in doing so. However, her father was expecting her brother and was prepared for the arrival of her brother to come and live with him and his wife, being Kimberly's stepmother. And he was evidently disappointed that Kimberly was living with him instead of her brother, and Kimberly witnessed that. So she wasn't able to develop the relationship that she had hoped to develop with her father.
I've never had a relationship with my father that I wish to God that I had. My father is a great guy, and I love him so much. And, I love him so much, and I always wanted to be daddy's girl, daddy's little princess, you know, whatever. I just want to matter to my dad, and I just don't think that I ever have or I ever will. But I knew I couldn't be with my mother anymore. I even told the judge that if he didn't let me go live with my dad, that I would run away and no one would find me again, or I would try to kill myself again, and this time I would succeed, and it would be his fault for not letting me live with a person who wasn't going to hurt me every day. And thankfully, I mean, he wasn't going to take me away from my mom, because they didn't do that back then. You know, it was mother keeps children, because that's just the way it is. And, you know, they weren't going to let me go live with my dad and stepmom because, well, he was my dad. And they just didn't break up children from their mother. But so it took me literally telling him that he would be the reason that I would end up being dead if he made me go back to live with my mom. He decided to let me get to live with my father.
Kimberly's childhood abuse impacted her general dynamic with other children and her socializing and friend making.
My best friend, and the only friend that I had, because children my age didn't like me because I was weird and I had Goodwill clothes that didn't fit, and I had a horrible hand chopped haircut from my mother's drunken rage. One night she butchered my hair, and so kids my age didn't like me. School was a nightmare. I was bullied every freaking day. Just bullied. And even my teachers bullied me. And so kids my age didn't like me. I had no friends my age. So my best friend, when I was 12 years old, was, let's see, she was probably 7 or 8 years old. And she was my best friend, my absolutely best friend. And it was because she didn't understand the abuse that was going on at my house. She didn't understand that she needed to be afraid of my stepfather, or that my life wasn't normal like hers was, mostly because I kept her away from my house, especially if my stepfather was going to be there. If he wasn't going to be home overnight, then she'd spend the night at my house and we'd have fun, or, you know, I'd spend the night at her house if he was going to be there, of course. And I mean, we got along and we had fun with each other, and even though I was still playing Barbies past the age that was appropriate for me, it felt fine because I liked being in the pretend world, because in my pretend world, nobody was hurting me and life could be what I wanted it to be. And it was pretty sad that my best friend was a very little girl, but which led to a lot of problems with her mother, because she was wondering if I had some sick intention with her daughter, because, you know, I'm the age I am and she's the age she is. And she was actually 4 when we started becoming friends, and I think I was 9 or 10. I don't remember exactly, but she was going on 5 when we met through a mutual friend who was more closer to my age, but not my age. And anyway, it's a long story. So, you know, I could see why her mother would be like, why are you interested in my 4.5, 5-year-old when you are 9, 10, whatever age you are? And I totally could understand why she thought that I had some sick intention, but I didn't, and nothing ever like that ever happened. And it was simply, she was a friend, I needed a friend, and we played Barbies, and we played babies, which was, you know, we both had our own dolls, and it was like a version of house, but we didn't have daddies or husbands. It was just the two of us had our own baby dolls, so it was like our version of house.
In her teenage years, Kimberly entered an abusive relationship with a boy that her family did not approve of, and she believes that her experience of childhood abuse could have impacted her to be drawn into such relationships.
Is a normalcy in your life when you're brought up in that, so that when that is gone, you literally spend every day waiting for the other shoe to drop, because you're living on eggshells and you're waiting, because you live your life in the fight or flight continuum. You know, you're ready to act at any second because your life depends on it. And when that all of a sudden stops, you don't know what to do with yourself. You literally don't. So you just literally sit there on eggshells waiting for the next shoe to drop, the next thing you have to react to. And when that doesn't come, it's very uncomfortable, and it produces anxiety in a different way. So getting involved with this guy, who at first treated me very nice, but I think I knew deep down he was going to be trouble. And since I knew, or I felt, I deserved the trouble and I deserved to be treated like crap, when he started treating me like crap, it felt normal to me. And finally, I don't have to wait for the other shoe to drop, because things are happening now. Not that I wanted them, because I didn't. Not that I liked it, because I didn't. But it was normal to me. It felt finally like, okay, I'm being treated the way I'm supposed to be being treated. This is what's supposed to be happening to me.
After ending the abusive relationship she was in, Kimberly went to live with a friend. And through that friend, she met the man who is now her husband. With her now husband, they started off as friends. And Kimberly believes that the rocky start in their romantic relationship was due to her experience and expectations from a partner that had been a result of living in an abusive environment. He was respectful, kind, and helpful towards her, and they have been together for more than 20 years.
Through that friend, I ended up getting involved with my now husband, who we had been friends with this whole time, but we just didn't know that we would be more than friends. And it was because of my now husband, he helped patch things up with my father and stepmother, which allowed me to be able to move back home in time to graduate high school. And then my husband and I, we have had our ups and downs. We have a great marriage, but we have a not so great life. And again, that's nothing to do with my abuse, and it's nothing to do with us. It's factors in our lives and things like that. But we have a very great, solid marriage, and is one of the biggest things that I am proud of. And it didn't start out this way. We started out with breaking up, going out, because he treated me so good in the beginning, and still now, but in the beginning, when I broke up with my ex, who was raping me and treating me like crap, and then I started going out with my best friend, who treated me like a queen, and never forced anything that I didn't want, never hurt me in any way, always tried to build me up, always tried to make me see my worth, always, he was and is literally my saving grace. Finally, at some point, through all the breakups and going out and breakup and going out, and we even got engaged, and then the day before our marriage or our wedding, I called off the whole thing, because I just couldn't be with a guy that was going to treat me so wonderfully, because I didn't deserve it. And when he didn't leave me after that, and he wasn't mad at me after that, my family was mad at me, everybody hated me for a while there because of all the money that I wasted and all the problems that I caused, because I called off the wedding literally the day before when everybody had already flown into town and all that fun stuff. He stuck by my side, and a year later, we actually ended up officially getting married, and we've been married ever since, 21 years now, and we've been together 24 years, I think, all together.
Kimberly's healing journey is through activism. She raises awareness about childhood abuse and helps survivors and victims. She has saved people from committing suicide and has changed lives with her help.
I believe that I'm healing through telling my story to other survivors and other victims and people that don't know anything about abuse. And helping them to understand what abuse is. And as for the survivors and the victims, helping them to know they're not alone. Having somebody they can relate with. Having somebody they can ask questions to or just talk to or a shoulder to cry on. I'm all that. I'm there for all of it. I want to be as helpful as I can be. I want to be a very strong advocate for abuse survival, and I would like to do my own podcast one day, and I'd really love to publish my book. It would mean the world to me if I could help other people through what I've been through and make my life mean something, because I just do not believe in any way that my life has any meaning at all. And I want everything that I've been through to mean something and to help others, because I've just been through so much. And I just really believe I have many things that I can offer other people because of everything that I've been through. And
now we will hear Kimberly's insights on abuse and some future plans she has.
Everybody's abuse is bad. Nobody should be abused. Nobody should go through any type of abuse. And everybody's abuse is bad, no matter what it is. No matter what it is. Everybody's abuse is abuse. And I don't care if you were smacked one time across the face and you thought it was the end of the world, life-changing abuse that was the worst thing ever, versus somebody who had something even worse than I did. Abuse is abuse. It doesn't matter the level of it. If you've been abused, you've been abused. And it should all be treated with compassion and love and care and kindness and respect. And everybody deserves to have somebody to hear them and believe them and care and help. And that's what I want to do. I want to help those people out there that need help. I want to give them back a voice. I found my voice with the presentations and my ability to share my story because I started talking about it to high school kids and college psychology students. And through that, I found my strength to be able to talk about and share my life and my history. And I want to do more. It's important to me to do more.
I greatly admire Kimberly's resilience. She is using the pain and trauma that she went through to help make the world a better place. And she's empowering survivors and victims. I also admire her courage to come and share this story with us today. What I learned from Kimberly's story is that childhood abuse has different impacts on various aspects of one's life. It can show itself in how a child acts in school, as Kimberly describes, in friendships and relationships. As a person who is in the society and who is living around many other people, and has interactions with colleagues, friends, and family members, all we have to do is observe. And if the survivor is vocal about their experiences and wants to talk, listen. I will end this podcast with a quote from S. Kelly Harrell. Often, it isn't the initiating trauma that creates seemingly insurmountable pain, but the lack of support after. Thank you for listening to the first episode of The Blue Radio.